What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 11 of the Tucson Pinball Podcast. Welcome to Wayne's World. So it's election day. It's November 8th, 2016. Let's talk about pinball. So we did the Tucson Comic Con this last weekend, and it was a lot of fun. We paid for a booth. We were not in the gaming area, as they tried to have us do in the beginning. We thought the stronger foot traffic would be in the exhibitor hall, and so we did that. And we got a 10x10 booth. We were able to fit three games, and the booth was providing a 10-foot table and two chairs. And we got rid of the table as fast as we possibly could. And the rules of Comic-Con are that you can not have your, like, your stuff protruding beyond. It's, you know, it's 10-foot deep as long as well as 10-foot wide. So you have that 10-foot depth to put your stuff in there, and you are not to be obstructing the walkway. And we figured that we would hopefully be getting some lines, so we needed to get rid of those tables, and we needed to put those games all the way to the back of the booth. And we did just that. And so for the TCC, the Tucson Comic Con, I printed out a couple hundred business card type things and cut those up. And we handed out about 200 cards, and over the weekend, we got two new page likes, and the web page went from an average about 2 to 4 hits a day to 20 to 30 on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I haven't checked in, you know, on Monday afternoon, so I have no idea if that trend has continued, but hopefully it has. I'll probably check a little later. But, I mean, the raw 2 likes, it's just like, ugh. But those 2 likes are from people that were very interested in many facets of what we have going on. So I talked to several people that were very interested in either doing the league or even just coming out casually. And you know, a lot of the guys were like, wait, you can drink beer there? And we said, yeah, there's a bar. And one of the guys, it was really funny, he like immediately ran over to his buddy that was 2 booths down. He's like, dude, we have to go to this. You can drink beer and play pinball. So it was kind of funny. It was very interesting to talk to a lot of people. We got to chat with a lot of folks, got a lot of different perspectives on, you know, everything from, holy cow, they, you know, these things still exist, to I played these when I was a kid, or I want one of these things, but they're too much money, and the full spectrum of kind of reactions that you could probably get, we probably got them. Let's talk about the lineup. So we had Super Mario Brothers, we had Data East Star Trek 25th, and we had Ghostbusters, and that is the order from left to right in which they were placed. The Star Trek was actually a nice conversation piece, because if you ran over that thing with a lint roller, you'd probably take off the rest of the paint that's on the cabinet. The playfield's great, but the cabinet and the head, holy smokes. So that's definitely a restoration project. We knew that going in, but it was a good playing game, and like I said, the playfield's good. And you know what? The gameplay on that game, after watching it play and even playing it several times over the course of the weekend, it's a pretty fun game. I mean, Data East kind of gets a bad reputation for some things. Like, some of the games are just, the scoring is just so unbalanced, and there's bugs all over the place, and I'm sure if we play this one enough, those will come to the surface. But for the most part, I think that Data East Star Trek 25th is pretty balanced. I mean, nothing is just like, oh, this is all worth 10,000 points, and oh, this shot's 20 million, oh my god, you win! You know, that's how some of the games are. So anyways, that one played pretty nicely. That one is actually a fairly new acquisition as far as being up and running. It's been in a garage for a little while. Just hadn't needed to pay any attention to it until this, and it's like, hey, you know what, that would probably be a good theme for the Comic-Con. So, yeah, we had, we only really had one major issue, and it was kind of only a major issue because I didn't have a good file with me. So, Data East Star Trek. I don't know why I keep saying Data East. It's Star Trek 25th. But, you know, there's four Star Trek pinball machines, so you can't just say Star Trek, because there's two of them that are just titled Star Trek. So, we'll just call it 25th. No, that sounds stupid. I don't know. We're just going to keep calling it the full name. So, anyways, that's kind of a newer game for us, this specific machine, and we didn't really know where any of the ball hang-ups were going to be, but I'm pretty sure we found a good chunk of them this weekend, and it really wasn't that many. We were able to nudge them free pretty nicely, and you had many people that were like, and they just kind of turn and look at you, and you kind of have to walk up and be like, it's okay, you can move these things a little bit, and it doesn't beep at you kind of... I don't know how to describe the Gottlieb Premier tilt warning, because it doesn't, like, flicker or anything. It's got that high-pitched beeping tone. It's probably the most... I don't even want to say the word offensive, because I think that's not proper, but as far as, like, tilt warnings go, it definitely gets your attention the most. And when people get hang-ups on Mario Brothers and you hear that sound, they're just like, oh my gosh, and you just kind of have to say, it's okay, it'll do that three times before it really cares. Or two times anyways, and then the third time it's the end. But anyway, so we had some hang-ups on Star Trek, and they were pretty easily cleared. We did have one issue where this kid, back-to-back games, I don't know how it even happened, but it seemed like there was a hang-up in the trough, the subway that goes between the two scoops, and then it kicks out on the right-hand scoop, and even the center shot, too. And that gets, wow, that's a very magnetic shot. So, anyways, I think what this kid had done is he had put it in that center, like, gaping hole area, and it got stuck there. It might have gone into a ball search, and then it just ended the game, but it let him start a new game, and as soon as he plunged, the game was like, well, wait a second, I'm missing a ball. Oh, no, let's end this game. And he did it the first time, and I think I caught that out of the side of my eye. Corner of my eye. There's no corners in your eyes, but you know. So I kind of saw that, but I was talking to someone and I didn't really get a good view of what had happened. And then it happened as I was standing like right behind Ghostbusters, and I said, you know what, here, why don't you play Ghostbusters and let me try to figure out why this keeps resetting essentially. That game ended, like, it killed the game automatically, and so the ball, it kicks out of wherever it is, and it comes down into the trough, and I probably played a 25-minute game, and actually put my name up on the board, and, you know, on Data East games, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do, because those default scores are a little high. They're just a little high. Try setting a high score on Hook. Yeah, go for it. So I put up the second highest score of the weekend on that. And Robert put up the first highest score on, like, the last... It was a slow time at one point, and he's like, I want to play Star Trek again, because it's his game, and he hasn't had a chance to play it a ton. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to play it. And he's just, you know, going to town on that thing, and he was just shy of 100 million, I think. And I put up, 87, 88, something like that. So we were both pretty pleased with that, and I think that's... the only time that either one of us cracked the 77 million, maybe, default replay score. So, yeah, twice all weekend. Granted, you know, these guys don't... The people coming up to play didn't know exactly, you know, how to play the games, but you could tell everybody was having fun, and that's the most important part. So, anyways, that was major hang-up number one, and that wasn't even really a major hang-up because it never happened again later, and so I'll probably... find out down the line why that actually happens and why that behavior exists, but not today. So anyways, the second one was I was watching, and Mario is a very popular theme with a Comic-Con group, let me just tell you, and that's exactly why we brought it. So anyways, Mario, I was watching somebody play, and I thought it looked like the right flipper was sticking up. And they drained and it went down, and I was just like, let's see what happens now. And so the next game, it shot right back up, and I said, you know what, let's kind of pop this real quick and see what happens. So I lifted the playfield, and the cabinet flipper switch the two pads, because there's a pad on that thin metal strip. That's what kind of gives it the spring, the leaf spring switch. Like, that's what gives it the flexibility. And then there's these pads at the very top where they make contact and actually send the power through. And those, I think from reading, are typically made out of tungsten, because those they don't erode as quickly when that voltage goes through as quickly as other materials. So anyways, those pads, they looked like a yin and yang symbol, and they were stuck together. And at first I'm sitting there going, I wonder if that's magnetized. And it seemed to separate fairly easily if you pushed on it a certain way. And I'm like, I don't think, and I kept, you know, kind of tapping them back together going, I don't think these are magnetized. So what ended up happening was, these might be the original switches. I have no idea, but they'll be replaced eventually. You got to listen to the full story to figure out why they will be replaced eventually. So anyways, we've got a yin and a yang kind of formation going, and when the switches make contact, they get pushed further by the button, that's when it actually kind of catches. So after trying to file it down with the textured portion of my pliers, because I didn't have a file with me, and that actually did kind of work a little bit, but I was seeing that I wasn't making very much progress, and so I had already kind of bent the inner one a little bit too far, and I was working on trying to bend that back so it was fine. And then, you know, I pressed the cabinet button. I said, hey, these are making contact. And I hit it probably 50 times in a row. And earlier, it would catch after like 4 or 5 tries. And I hit it 50 times and it didn't catch. And I said, you know what, you got to push the button in a little further, but this thing's not sticking. And we are at the show to not be repairing pinball machines. We are at the show to be letting people play the pinball machines. So that is the fix. And nothing really got changed. It just is working with a different geometry. So anyways, that was cool. Let's see, overall impression from the Comic-Con was good. Like I said, I gave out 200 cards, or we gave out 200 cards, but we had way more than that playing the games. And some people, you could kind of tell, they were just kind of casually passing by and, oh yeah, I'm going to play a couple balls, not even a full game. How many four-player games did we have to just turn off because people started four-player games by pressing start and saying, why isn't the ball shooting? And then walking away after playing 2 balls of a 4-player game. So, yeah, we power cycled the games a few times this weekend as well. But you know what? Lots of people that were told kind of how the setup is. They're all set to 3 balls. You get 3 balls per game and stuff like that. You know, people learn after you explain it. So there's not too much of a need to be frustrated, because you're basically teaching a new person to play pinball every few minutes. And the days were long, but, you know, we got exposure to a lot of people for the hobby. So how many of those actually turn into customers and participants, not even in events, but just, you know, overall bringing their buddies to play and kind of growing the player base that way of, you know, it's kind of like, hey, let's bring up a Wayne's World reference. So if you remember in Wayne's World, they're talking about, I believe, the concert, and Wayne's sitting there going, you know, and, you know, somebody comes up with the idea, and they tell their friend, and they tell their friends, and they tell their friends, and so on, and so on, and the screen keeps splitting. And it's just like, if that would work for pinball, that would be great, and hopefully this was the jumping off point for that. So it's going to take a little while to figure out how many of those were players that were going to actually get into the community and into the hobby. But I talked to one guy. He lives in Tucson. He puts together one of the larger, like, video game tournament show things up in Phoenix. And he didn't know that we existed, and he didn't know that D&D existed. And he's got 2 games. He said he just bought a Data East Batman, and he has another Data East game, and I can't remember what it is. But, I mean, he's got two machines. We were talking shop, and he was, like, all into it, and he took a card, obviously, and we chatted, and, you know, it's like there was more than one person that was like, yeah, I've got a game, or I've had a game for a while, and this and that, and I didn't know anything like this existed. So we actually might have found maybe a dozen pinheads this weekend just because we were there and we started a conversation. So that was a very exciting thing. And like I said, two likes, and we went from 2 to 4 web hits a day to 20 to 30 a day. And to put that into a little bit of perspective, the league that I run is just shy of 20 players, and the bi-weekly tournaments are 5 players, give or take 2, you know, normally. So it's not a giant community, which is really sad, because the metro area in Tucson is about 1 million people. So, you know, we've got plenty of people out there to snag, so I wish it was a little easier sometimes. Anyways, that's enough rambling. Let's see. So what is CPR serving? They're serving dessert in the form of a very, very tasty new Playfield reproduction. They are doing Diner. Yes, they are. I got a text message from one of the league members, and he's like, dude, CPR just threw up Diner on their pre-order page. You need to check it out. So I looked at it, and I'm just like, I told myself when I bought Diner, if CPR ever did a play field, I was going to get one, and at some point, Diner will be retired. So CPR has gone from being a 2-plus-year turnaround from when they open a pre-order list and then actually start delivering stuff. They've cut that down to 12 to 18 months, and they're trying to keep it closer to 12 months. So if they stay the course on that, then I might have a new Diner playfield in 12 months. And Robert has done the conversion on an Evel Knievel when they did those playfields, and that, oh my goodness, that playfield is amazing. It's amazing. CPR does really nice work. And the conversion that he did, like, he did a full-up restoration when he did that playfield swap. New parts. The only thing that's reused is stuff under the playfield. Everything else is pretty much new. The gameplay is great. It plays fast, because I played it a lot before the new playfield. It plays so nice. So I'm very excited for the Diner playfield, and hopefully it's closer to 12 months than 18 months, but I don't think I'm going to be retiring Diner even in the 18-month time frame. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But anyways, that was a very pleasant surprise, because on CPR's webpage, for a very long time, it has listed Diner's art as being about half done, and I think it's been like that for about 2 years. So I honestly didn't have much expectations when it came to the timing and them finishing that off. So kudos to CPR and whoever was working on the art on that. I'm looking forward to it, because all of my inserts are raised and there's Mylar on it, so I can't really do anything about it without completely hosing up all the decal stuff on those inserts. So it's just going to stay as it is for now, and because I'm paranoid about ruining that, and I don't really want to do that, and I don't have to, because CPR is coming to the rescue. So that'll be cool. So, all right, final topic. Oh my goodness, it's less than 19 minutes into this thing, and we're on the home stretch at this point. So Ghostbusters code was updated to 1.10 recently, and they added many new bugs. Features and bugs. Yes. So there's some new features, and it mostly has to do with the different mode ladders. And the timer used to run on those things, and I think you could stop the timer if you like didn't hit a switch for a while. But either way, now they have and these are all options now. Now you have the option in the settings to turn on or off the, if you drain, your mode will still be running when the next ball is ready to go option. So I don't remember what they call that. I think they call it a carryover of some sort. So you can now time out the mode, and the mode will essentially be finished. And you can also, if you drain, the mode will carry over into the following ball. It used to be that if you did not finish the mode within the timer, you would have to restart that mode by going through the Slimer sequence, which is dangerous. And when you drained, you would also end the ball and end the mode, but not actually have the mode be over. You would have to restart the mode and finish it on a subsequent ball, assuming you had more. So, two other big things is the add-a-ball is lit now from the get-go on multi-balls, and I think they did change something else with an extra ball setting. I can't remember, but the extra ball settings in 1.05 were broken, and so it seems like they have fixed those, which is kind of nice, and so scores can become a little bit more healthy, let's say. So the feedback... Oh, and there's also the scream. Yeah, if you've not seen the scream, it happened 5 times at Expo, and I'm trying to go off of memory. Let's see, what's the tally? I think we scared 2 kids, a third, like, visibly scared a kid. One other just turned and walked away from Star Trek. Like, he was, I don't know, preteen and just was like, uh-uh. Just because he didn't know what the crap had happened. But, and then it happened to 2 different adults. One of them was just staring at the playfield like, where's the ball? And the other one turned to us and was like, dude, that was so cool! You know, so it's a huge mixed bag of results. And it was, you know, the booth, because so we weren't on the edge. We had a booth on either side of us. And after the first time or two, they both got kind of used to it. And you can, there's like a zapping sound that happens because the display, I don't even want to describe it. There was a zapping sound that happened. That's the indicator it's going to happen. And immediately the guys in the other 2 booths would like look up and look at Ghostbusters and whoever was playing. And it would do its thing, and it was funny. It was cool to watch. It was funny. Like, the 2 kids that kind of walked away, they weren't, like, crying or anything. They were just like, oh, my gosh, you know, kind of overexposed to things. You know, I don't know what the term is. But anyways, it was funny. It was, and they came back. I mean, they played, and we just, you know, they were fine, and nobody got hurt, and everybody was okay. So it was, but it was very interesting. It's very much an attention getter because it does do it at a higher volume than what the game is set at, and it was cool. It was one of the booths next to us. He was a little nervous because it happened like right off the bat, the first night, and he's like, "Is it gonna do that a lot?" And we kind of said, no, that's actually like the 3rd time ever that we've seen it happen. So total tally for the weekend that I was paying attention to was 5. It happened 5 times in, I don't know, like 20 hours. So anyways, that's kind of it. I had started taking notes for episode 12, and I don't know where those went. So we'll have episode 12 at some point, hopefully soon. I think there's been a little bit of a gap since the last one. But aside from that, you know, that's kind of it. Oh, hey, let's do an outro, shall we? Before we say goodbye from Wayne's World. So the Facebook page can be linked to, or is linked to, from our webpage, which is TucsonPinball.com. And the Facebook page is Tucson Pinball LLC, all one word. If you search for us, we are the ones that take likes, not friends. We will be your friend, but we are... Tucson Pinball is not human, so Tucson Pinball does not take friends on Facebook. We've got shirts available on the webpage. I will ship those out. I might have to get a shipping quote if you're not in the States, because I don't know what it costs to ship internationally on that type of stuff. Let's see what else. Oh, yes. Please... just visit the webpage to artificially inflate those hits and make me feel better. And no, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. The email address is wayne@tucsonpinball.com. If you've got any questions, comments, concerns, feedback, let me know. If you have any ideas on how we can get in front of people in our community based on things that you have seen in your community, assuming you're not in Tucson, let us know, because we are here to grow this hobby, and that's what we're trying to do. So, yeah, that's about it. So have a good week. Since it is election night, don't drink too much, and we'll see what tomorrow brings, okay? Till then, party on. Later.
Party on, Wayne. Party on, Garth. It's Wayne's World. Wayne's World.